Yeah, we're in Paw Patrol mode hardcore right now, which is a different mess entirely I got to deal with.
Are we news users?
Not by the traditional sense.
Especially for a company in Twitter that has significantly underperformed from a profitability standpoint.
I guess what I'm trying to say poorly is that
we are thinking about prop bets for the future as well. So I think I like the way you think it. I love how you want to maximize revenue.
Jeremiah's a magician. I know I'll make it work.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Results Junkies podcast. We are at the eve of Halloween and getting ready to crank out an episode for this week. And there's scary stuff if you're an employee at Twitter. But we're probably going to get started on some Apple stuff before we get to Twitter, to Behemoth in the tech space. And Paul's getting ready with 75 different Halloween costumes, aren't you?
I know, man. Yeah. Yes. Short answer, yes. I got too many kids. But we got Hermione. We got... I'm Where's Waldo this year. Dana's a bat. Grant is a little baby bat with her just because he's attached to her at the moment. Henry is Blippi at the moment, although that could change anytime between now and this evening. And Wyatt, what is Wyatt? Oh, Wyatt's a little dinosaur hatching. But yeah, we're in the thick of it right now.
Nice.
How are you?
Yeah, same. Charlie loves Halloween more than just about anything. So so we're knee deep in that. We had our first Halloween last night. We'll have a second one tonight. So, and then we'll talk about this a little bit later in the episode. But on the little bit of a personal side, I've got something crazy coming up that you guys have seen me do before that involves raising money for an incredible cause for kids and one of my favorite places in the world. So a little more on that. But if you're just tuning into the show and you'd like to follow us on social, you can find us saying sometimes intelligent things. He is at Paul Singh. I am at Pizza in Motion. And if you want to shoot us an email, questions, comments, throwing rotten produce, you can email show@resultsjunkies.com. And if you're listening on the road or at the gym or whatever and you get done, there's a little button in the show notes where you can leave us a quick review or a rating, which would be awesome. Both of our topics this week, man, I mean, they're so thorny. Twitter and Elon is certainly something we could spend days on. But the first article that you sent my way, it's one of those, like, I almost feel ashamed I didn't see it coming per se, but it's a breakdown of how Apple's ad revenue is growing in the face of the changes that they made for Ask App Not to Track, going back almost 2 years now.
Yeah, I might be putting my foot in my mouth here, but I think if you were to go back to our episodes around this time when it came out, I think we did talk about this. We sort of speculated that this would not only cause problems for all the other ad platforms, but that it could set the stage for Apple to get those ad dollars spent. I mean, I distinctly remember saying things like, look, the ad dollars are still going to get spent. The question is where.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll let you set up the article because I think even though, well, okay, if you're listening to this and you're like, what does this have to do with me? I think it has everything to do with you. Whether you're an app developer or you're a consumer, I think this has everything to do with you. And I think it's going to be probably good, depending on where you are on that spectrum. But anyway, let's talk about it. So why don't you set it up and we'll get into it.
Yeah, there are two main thrusts of the article. And to be clear, Paul and I haven't really talked about this in detail. So while I think I know where his thoughts are, we'll figure them out. And we might figure it out just based on what I define as the two main thrusts of the article. The first main thrust is that Apple's ad revenue is generally trending up and by a decent amount, although given that Apple's ad revenue is much smaller than the other platforms, a 4% increase for them is very different than a 4% decrease for Facebook. We'll just set that aside for a second. But their ad revenue is up. Advertisers seem to be migrating to their platforms. Separately from that, they're adding ad placements. And some of these are innocuous, or what I would define as innocuous. So like extra ad placements in places like the App Store. And I think folks who are iPhone users know that there aren't a ton of places that Apple just injects random ads into things. So their placements are, you know, much narrower than they might be on platforms like Facebook and things of that nature. So the other thing that comes up is And I actually thought about this the other day. It's funny how they frame this up in the article, because I'm setting up some new Mac Minis for some of our restaurants. And I noticed that in my setup process, they have this screen that talks about turning on personalized ads. Now, I read it, and I'm sure most consumers don't, but I understood it to mean the same thing as ask app not to check, but in a much more eloquent way. And so what the article calls out is that, as you and I discussed the very first time we brought this issue up, the first choice when you install a new app on your iPhone is, do you either want to ask the app not to track you, or do you want to allow? And so the choice that's bigger and emphasized is, you know, don't share my information. And then the lesser choice is to allow the information. And when you're setting up a new Mac, it's the other way around. The choice that's highlighted and ready for you is, why don't you turn on personalized ads? Now, it's a much smaller garden. It's limited to some of Apple's pre-installed apps like News and Stocks. And I'm not sure how many users use those apps. I tried to find adoption rates for those native Apple apps, and I couldn't find any published anywhere. So that's something that I still want to dig around on. But those are, I think, the two main buckets: this ad revenue up, and Apple, you know, injecting more ads into their natively installed apps.
Yes, yes, and yes. I mean, really, what it comes down to is that when it's in their favor, it's worded very optimistically, and when it's you know in somebody else's favor, it's worded very pessimistic is not the right word, but very dangerously
protective.
You know? Protective, yes. yeah. So you know, stepping back and looking at it, I mean, it's ingenious, right? But look, I think the people that it's going to hurt the most is really the other ad platforms. I don't think it. Like, I think when you and I talked about this originally, the we had started testing, and I might be mistaken here, but back on a couple episodes back then, we actually individually kind of turned ad tracking on and off every once in a while just to see what would happen. And you know,
yeah,
the quote unquote worst thing that happened was like just the ad targeting was weird. You know, if you weren't allowing to get tracked, you were getting targeted for random stuff. And there's a strategy behind that. And maybe we find that episode and we'll link to it in the show notes. But anyway, I think, yeah, look, I think it's just fascinating to see how it works out. I think that this is really, if it's not something that you and I need to be worried about, I think it's the Facebooks and the Googles as platforms that probably need to be worried about it. But on the other side, I think that if you're a developer or you manage ad spend for somebody else, I think I still stand by what I said back then, which is, look, the ad dollars are going to get spent. And, you know, we probably need to be looking at this platform to just figure out if it's worth testing dollars here. But you're also right in the sense that it's not quite yet clear how much usage or how many eyeballs there are on their native apps. Anyway, you may or may not get any ROI on your ad spend on Apple's ad platform unless your users are really already there. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I think we should put this question out on social because I did find some numbers, but I couldn't tie them back to anything. They were third party sites. I couldn't find anything in Apple's reporting, and some of the numbers that I saw varied greatly. The numbers I saw, were in the hundreds of millions of users or something like Apple News. But I also wonder what defines a user by their statistics. Because here's the thing, too. I guess taking a step back, I think you've sent me articles periodically from Apple News. Do you use it on your iPhone?
Only if an alert pops up. Like, I don't actually open the Apple News app unless an alert pops up and I'm like, oh, what's that article?
Yes. Yeah. And so this is so interesting. So it doesn't happen often, but Apple News will very infrequently send me an update about some news story and flash it on my screen. And it happens so infrequently, I haven't gone to try and find the settings to turn it off, because I generally go to Wall Street Journal or New York Times for my news. And I have news alerts set up with both of them. And so I get those pretty quickly on stories. So I use Apple News the same way that you do, which is Apple will sometimes push me something and I haven't seen it on the Journal or the Times or something else like that, and I'll read their version of it. Are we news users?
Not by the traditional sense,
right?
But they own the hardware, and I think sure. Actually, let me let you finish your thought, because I won't. Anyway, let me let you finish your thought.
Yeah, this is the problem with a gated community. So if I'm an advertiser right now, if I'm a startup founder and I'm trying to figure out if it makes sense to advertise in Apple News, you know, what statistics are out there for me to find out what the average user is, because I would consider that there are a lot of people using Apple News the way you and I do. And I don't view that as a very productive user base, you and I, at least.
That's totally fair. And I think, okay, so let's zoom out just for a second to make a point here. So if somebody was pitching us a standalone news app and this was the pattern they described, we would absolutely back off and be like, well, wait a second. You know, that's not a real user. In this case, what we're talking about is that the owner and developers of the hardware platform that this is all happening on, that's who we're talking about here. And so I guess what I'm trying to say poorly is that I think that you're right in the sense that, you know, asking the question of what is a user, but I think it's important to add the context of, but hang on, like, you're still using the device. In other words, Apple can and likely will change the frequency of those alerts as this stuff starts to work even more. For example, that, you know, you mentioned it when you were setting this up, you said the personalized ads prompt comes up when you set up the device. You're absolutely right about that. But again, we're talking about the hardware creator here. It's not impossible for them to flash that prompt to existing devices at some point in the future, right? Whether it's the next software update or whatever. So I want to keep saying that you're right to ask the question of what is a user. That is a valid question. But I think it's important to just remember these guys, you're still using the device. And until you switch to something else, they're probably going to do whatever it takes eventually to wear you down and get you to press that, you know, turn on personalized ads button. I don't know where this goes from here, but I think it's just fascinating to watch. And I think that, like, if you're spending ad dollars, you'd be remiss to not go test this stuff and figure out, like, you know, can I get some good ROI on at least some ad spend over there?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too. While we were talking, I realized I hadn't logged into the Apple Stocks app in forever. So I just figured I'd take a peek. And there is a little bit of tweaking there. And it's interesting. There's two things there that didn't used to be there. And an old stock portfolio that I had in there eons ago happens to still be in there. Just some, you know, stocks that I track. Apple, Boeing, Kinder Morgan, stuff like that. And then there's a the bottom third of the page has top stories from Apple News. And there's their stock related stories. So CNBC, Reuters, The Atlantic. And then there's a very discreet, almost the same, like, opaque, light grayish color of some of the fonts on the page that kind of blend in. At the very bottom, it says Yahoo Finance. And if I tap on that Yahoo Finance button at the very bottom, it takes me to, wait for it, Yahoo Finance. And so, you know, that was never there before. And so I find it interesting that you can already see little bits of how they're sort of tucking these things in a very, very subtle way. I would say, like, this definitely did not interfere with my experience. And when I thought about the Apple News and Docs thing, it's like when I have gone into Apple News, which is very infrequently, it's just showing me tiles of news stories. So there really isn't a natural place for an ad. And so I'm assuming they'll probably, you know, tuck this in between the tiles. But it goes back to, you know, which users are going to find these ad placements most useful, because I would, you know, mostly regard App Store placements as the most valuable for folks who are starting an app. And then the news stuff and the stock stuff, I mean, unless you're in a specific vertical where they can say, hey, we're going to publish an article about the Supreme Court and I have a Supreme Court blog or podcast or whatever in the feed. So it's relative and it's associated. It's going to be harder to see the ROI for these ads for a while until they've been out and have some some data to show for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the broader thing here is just to kind of see, like, this is a trend, and it's going to, if anything, it their sort of domination is going to accelerate. I think that's just the key thing here. Like, the reason I really wanted to just talk about it is because, selfishly, in the context of the startups you and I look at and investing in, you know, it's almost going to be a red flag if a founder is not thinking about, you know, testing user acquisition through one of these platforms as well. Again, not to say that that's like, oh, we're never going to invest in that, right? But at the same time, a founder that says, you know, let's just say they do end up showing you the use of proceeds, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago is probably not the best thing in the world, but let's just say they did. And if you don't, if you see like all the money going to Facebook and Google, it at least begs the question of like, wait, hang on a second. That those two platforms are underperforming for everybody else in the portfolio. Either you know something they don't, or you don't really know what you're talking about. And let's start digging into that even more. So, and that's the reason I bring this up is because like, this is probably going to become more and more of a conversation in our own, you know, investing. And, you know, like you've been hinting at, we're going to launch this 25K, you know, pitch thing on here soon. And so, yeah, like you should go test these platforms. Everybody should, because A, you don't want to be betting against Apple, but B, I'm going to bet money that your paid ads are underperforming everywhere else anyway.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, how portfolio companies are spending money on advertising is so key now, especially because the thing that we always look for, the thing that was that drove it the most was this philosophy of find one or two things that work really well and pour gasoline on them.
That's right.
And so as we sit here and look at this, you know, this piece of the landscape, it's, you know, what defines doing well. And how do you pour gasoline on it? Because at least from what we can see so far, the Apple model is less refined than Facebook and Google. So you may find, and you know, I think, you know, when we've seen models that are less refined, that also means that there's likely niches that can be exploited for folks who are smart and want to work hard at it. Until all the dials get turned. So you may get outsized value and you may get nothing. You may get, you know, the barbell effect.
That's exactly it, right? There is that early stage sort of arbitrage opportunity with every platform. And you've most recently seen it with TikTok, right? Everybody got super hot on TikTok. But now if you were to turn on your ad campaigns there, it's just an entirely different game.
Yeah.
And so not to keep digging this in further, but it's like, look, you know, I think you got to be realistic about what your customer looks like. If they're, you know, B2B, B2C, whatever, and go look at the research of what kind of users carry iPhones around and iPads or whatever else, and ask yourself, like, if your potential customer fits the, you know, sort of aligns or overlaps with the average Apple product user, well, maybe it's worth testing to see if you can find that sort of arbitrage opportunity. So,
yeah.
You know, and coming full circle, I think that's going to be a really interesting sort of subset of discussions around, you know, future pitches we see as well.
So Elon showed up on Twitter. I don't know if you heard.
And that guy, like, did you see I don't even know if this is like... I don't know if this can be categorized as trolling, but the first tweet was he posted himself walking into HQ with a sink. Did you see that?
I know.
I mean, that's master class in trolling, I think.
Yes.
Anyway, but he's also made a lot of changes in the, I mean, what is it? That was two business days ago since this recording and maybe four calendar days. It's wild. That's wild.
Yeah, and you pointed out one of the most significant things, and we'll get to the article in just a second, but you point out one of the most significant things, which I certainly always thought was an opportunity. I just had no idea he would move this quickly. So for folks who like, you know, Twitter is obviously predominantly an app that lives on mobile devices, but, you know, shock of shock, they have a website. And, you know, if you go to the Twitter homepage, or if you went to the Twitter homepage prior to sometime in the last couple of days, you'd see what amounted to essentially a gated community, which was, you know, hey, log in or sign up here. And you could navigate around it if you knew somebody's handle. So if I said, you know, Twitter Paul Singh, I could get to your handle and I could get to, you know, stuff that you had posted. But just to sort of be able to play around in the playground that was Twitter, it was gated in sort of a weird way. And you pointed out that instantly changed, you know, between the time that Elon took over and today.
Yeah. Yes. So, okay. So there's two things here. So the first is, you know, kind of segueing off that last conversation. Look, on a personal note, what he does or doesn't do with Twitter, I don't really care. You know, I'm in dad mode these days and beacon mode, whatever. But on the other hand, you know, with the investing we do and the founders we talk to, it's important to keep an eye on what happens with these platforms, because Twitter, say what you will about it, it is at least one of the larger distribution platforms for, you know, certain types of information and companies and startups and whatever. So, anyway, that's, you know, that's the reason I kind of pay attention to it, is like this sort of macro, you know, what do I think is happening with that platform? And how's that going to shape some of the conversations with founders this week? That sort of thing. But on the other side, yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. If you don't know this already, when you buy something on an Apple device, you know, when you buy that app or you, and anything you buy, it doesn't matter if you're on an Apple device and you hit that little upgrade button or you hit the little purchase button or whatever, Apple's usually taking a 30% cut of that. I mean, that's a lot. That's a huge cut. And so I think, you know, the second reason I think this is really fascinating is that, you know, now you've got Twitter starting to move fast. I mean, just in 4 days, he's made a lot of changes, but for better or for worse, he's made a lot of changes. He's sort of setting this tone of what the momentum is going to look like at Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's unreasonable to think that at some point they're going to go head to head about this whole 30% cut thing, because Twitter, for example, is in a weird pickle. And this is just me oversimplifying it for the sake of the podcast here. Twitter's in a weird pickle. Yes, they have a website. And yes, if they could get me over to that website and make me buy something, then they would not have to share any money with Apple. But that's just it. If they can get me to the website. The reality is that, you know, all of us that have iPhones are living inside the apps on the iPhone, and Apple knows it. So Twitter's in this pickle. You've got to grow the business. You've got to also grow the revenue, but you're also beholden to the device that it's getting displayed on. And so I just, given Elon's track record, I don't see him sort of taking that lying down. And if he wins, by the way, this is good, I think, for all of us, including, you know, our portfolio companies and all that, because Apple sort of had a stranglehold, you know, on that distribution channel, you know, and they're just sort of, not to be like overly hyperbolic here, but it's sort of like the mafia guy standing outside the door, just taking his 30% cut just because he happens to be there, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. And both Apple and Google have made very small steps to reduce commissions, but mostly in terms of targeting the little guy. So like, if I remember correctly, you know, Apple defines a smaller developer, and so those folks can get a 15% commission. And then Google sort of just does it as a straight ramp rate. So your first like $1 million in revenue is at 15%, and then after that it goes to 30%. So
how nice of them.
I know. And then so Apple had a small tweak, if I remember correctly, they knocked a few percent off of it, like during like the Fortnite trial and stuff like that. So there's been a little bit of fiddling with this fee, but to your point, I mean, you know, they've bandied around a bunch of different numbers, but, you know, it sounds like there's some sort of Twitter subscription service coming down the pike, you know, pre-verified accounts, you know, blue check mark stuff, maybe other features like being able to edit tweets and things like that. And there have been prices that I've seen anywhere from $4 a month to $20 a month. And, you know, like that's so as you scale that up and say, you know, I'm paying $20 a month to Twitter and Apple's getting six of that. I mean, that's a pretty big cut of the pie, especially for a company in Twitter that has significantly underperformed from a profitability standpoint, its competitors in this space.
It adds up real quick. Yeah. But I think that, like, again, on a personal note, it doesn't really bother me it's not something I care about. But at the same time, on a professional note, something's going to change here. And I think it's going to probably be better for everyone else in the sense that, you know, that other solo developer or that small startup having to give up 30% or even 15%, you don't have to pay the middleman. I mean, look, here's the thing. Kind of zooming all the way up to like the proverbial 100,000 foot, 200,000 foot view of this, here's the thing. Technology always crushes the middleman. It always crushes the middleman. That's the thing. Is it like, you know, if we've learned anything about the internet over the last 10 or 20 years, it's that the middleman or middlemen, whatever you want to call it, are the ones that tend to get squashed. And so that's probably what's going to happen here in the sense that, you know, Apple right now kind of gets their cut. And, you know, you pointed out like, yeah, they sort of dropped it here and there or whatever, right? But why is it still there at all? Well, you know, it's just wild to me. So do I think it goes to zero? Absolutely not. But I think that it's going to be, if I had to guess, Apple's not very, I mean, they're probably one of the most forward-thinking companies for better or for worse. If I had to guess, this ad platform stuff is almost like a necessary thing for them, because they're eventually going to have to really cave on this sort of middleman cut of profits thing. It's just inevitable. I mean, I don't think they planned on Elon and Twitter, but I just think that at some point they have to realize that the writing's on the wall, whether it's government that eventually steps in and says, hey, you can't just take 30%, or it's, you know, somebody formidable at a large platform that steps in. Just to be clear, I'm not speculating they're going to go to zero. I think that it's going to go to single digits or something like that.
But I mean, let's take a step back. I mean, and think about this for just a second. And I'm not defending Apple or condemning them, to be clear. But I think you and I both know the way the public markets work, which is, you know, they're public market companies are going to figure out ways to maximize shareholder return, at least the good ones. And Apple has traditionally been a good stock to own. So, you know, if that revenue goes from 30% to, you know, 3% or some other number, you know, Apple's just not going to take a big chunk in reduced profits. And I don't know exactly which bucket in app purchases comes out of. You know, like iPhone revenue is, if I remember roughly from the last 10K filing, I think they're like half of their revenue is from the iPhone and like 20% is from services. So I don't know which bucket, you know, this cut comes out of, but it's you know, likely one of those two buckets. A significant reduction in that bucket changes Apple's economics. So how does that affect users? Does that mean that handsets now become more expensive? Does that mean Apple Music becomes more expensive? Because, you know, when we think about that pendulum, if you will, say, like, there's two things that Apple could do. Apple could raise the price of its devices, or it could raise the price of its services if the commission for the Apple Store goes away. And if we think about that as a test on the ecosystem, if the price of their services goes up, Apple Music, let's use as an example, or Apple TV Plus, you know, I mean, they're going to get whatever share of those markets they're going to get at their price points. And that's not going to have a big effect on founders, I don't think. On the flip side, if the price of devices changes and devices are updating less frequently because people are holding their devices longer, I think that has a significant impact on developers and founders and you know, how they're able to build technology for newer and better phones if adoption rates are lower. So I do think, however this works out, could have a profound effect on how the ecosystem works.
I think, okay, so that's a pretty big topic. And I think some of this, well, let me talk about some of this, but some of this I think we should probably talk about spinning this out to the next episode too, but hear me out. Okay, so first off, I think you're absolutely right when you say they're not going to just give up that profit. You know, like, it's going to have to come from somewhere else. I think that's correct. I think that that's likely going to come a lot from that new ad platform. Like, that platform is going to become even, like, just, I would bet that as you look at the future 10Ks or the future filings, or whatever, there's going to be more and more of an emphasis on that ad revenue, because A, it's a proven model. The public markets understand it. You know, when you look at, you know, Meta and all that other stuff. B, given where we are in the economy, they can't really increase the price of, you know, consumer hardware or any of those other things. So anyway, yeah, you're right. They're not going to like just take it laying down. They're going to make their money elsewhere. And I think it's going to be through ads. But on the other side, I think that it's worth talking about, like, so this is the part where I think we might break it out to a separate episode at some point, is that, you know, you talked about this idea of like, well, what if they upgrade less often or whatever, right? And I think that, like, what's fascinating is that 2 or 3 weeks ago, I bought an Apple Watch Ultra.
Yeah.
I had a Series 3 from like 5 years ago. And finally, I was like, oh, whatever, I'll just get the Ultra. And I use it for running and whatever. And, you know, I bought the Aura Ring based on your recommendation and that sort of thing. And here's the thing, like, maybe this is just me being like a 41-year-old weirdo. But the thing is, the Apple Watch Ultra is so good that really the only reason I even have to keep the phone around anymore is for the camera, if I want to take a picture of the kids or whatever. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. But I think that's probably a longer discussion at some point here, because it sort of also, for me anyways, changes how I think about hardware upgrades anymore. And I'm curious what that, like, whether I'm in the minority or if other people are sort of thinking this way. But in other words, like, you know, I don't know, like, I don't, for example, I don't scroll through social media if I'm either in producer mode or consumer mode, right? So like, if I'm not at my desk, I'm usually in consumer mode, meaning like, I'm just, the watch is good enough to send me the real-time alerts I need for whatever I need. And then if I need to switch to producer mode, then I can pop open my laptop or hit my desk or whatever. So the bigger point I'm just trying to at least maybe start a discussion around is like, you're right that like the user behavior might change of Apple users or whatever. I'm curious to see what it actually, like what it turns into. Like, I'm curious, again, this is a much bigger topic. I know we probably, you didn't mean to go down this path and I've probably taken us down here, unfortunately, but I think this, given the pervasiveness of Apple, I think last time I read, Apple phones are about 50% of the US market share. I'm sorry, of the global market share, I think. Somebody correct me, but it's a big number. Like, they're half of, you know, the consumers that matter. Like, if you need somebody to pay you, probably half of the people that are going to pay you for your service carry an Apple phone. So it's a pretty large number. And so you got to pay attention to what's happening here. And, you know, you're right. Like, if behavior changes, prices change, all these other things happen, it's just it'll be interesting to see what these users do and how that affects our portfolio companies and that sort of stuff. So anyway, lots to unpack there. I don't want to make this like a 3-hour episode, you know, either.
So, yeah, that stuff all does seem like something we should roll up into another episode. But man, I mean, just so much to watch for. We're, you know, two, as you noted, two business days into the Elon owning Twitter, and we already have just a buffet of stuff that we could go through for future episodes.
Yeah. Yes. Short answer. Yes. Yeah. I mean, just looking at like what he's already tweeted and done at Twitter, you know, I think in the last episode we talked about how he, you know, said something about letting go of 75% of staff. Now I think he's kind of proven it. he's getting rid of all the middlemen. So, oh, sorry. Side note, actually, if you ever get a chance, look up, so there's a Twitter account called, oh man, I'll send you a link to it, but it's something about like tech emails or something like that. I'll find the account and send it to you. And what these guys do is essentially they get leaks of what, you know, private emails or text conversations look like around these deals. And, you know, for example, I had read about how a couple months ago, the then CEO at Twitter, Parag, you know, messaged Elon and said something like, "Hey, you know, you're hurting morale or whatever." And there's this like legendary thing that, you know, I shouldn't say legendary, but anyway, there's this, you know, all the news is like, well, then Elon just responded with, "What have you done this week?" or something. And reading it is one thing, but then over the weekend I was scrolling through Twitter and I ran into that, the actual messages, and reading it is entirely different. Here you have this like CEO saying, like, essentially politely saying, "Hey, please don't say these things publicly because it's hurting my morale, my company's morale," or whatever. It's entirely something else to see Elon respond to this really well-formed thought with just one phrase to the CEO of Twitter and says, "What have you accomplished this week?" It was like, it was so cringeworthy. But again, two business days into it, seems like he wasn't wrong either.
Yeah. Well, definitely a lot more to come on the Twitter front. I can't wait to see where we go this week. I wonder if you'll indulge me just a moment to talk about my crazy week.
Bring it. I love it.
And you should remember this from when we did this last year and then a couple of years ago. But for folks who are listening, we're doing a charitable fundraiser at the end of this week and love to have you guys participate while you watch me do incredibly crazy stuff. So there's a charity that most people don't know the name of. It's called Give Kids the World. It's the backbone behind Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I'll explain a little bit more about what they do. But what you get to watch me do this week is I am flying to Orlando, and we are going to try to ride every ride at Disney World in one day. And the last time we did this, it amounted to about 20 miles of walking and running over the course of about 18 hours in a day. And it was pretty epic. We were pretty broken after we were done, and we did not manage to get all the rides in, but we managed to get in 46 rides across 4 parks and 20 miles. So we're doing that again later this week, and you can find that on my Instagram feed at Pizza in Motion. And just some background on Give Kids the World. So this is a village down in Florida. The land was donated by a hotelier many years ago, and has since grown into this, I won't say empire because that makes it sound bad, but it's a big village where if you're a critically ill child and Disney World is your dream trip, Make-A-Wish Foundation can grant you that dream trip. And Give Kids the World provides everything for the trip. The hotel, free ice cream. I mean, you can have ice cream for breakfast if you want, which I think as a kid would be great. They've got vehicles that are set up to transport kids that have medical needs, free park tickets. The characters come to Give Kids the World Village. It's an unbelievable charity. and they do unbelievable work for kids. And, you know, you and I both having young kids, it's, you know, terrifying to think about living through that as a family. And Give Kids the World helps provide some incredible memories for these kids. So that's it in a nutshell, man. I'm going to be doing some pretty stupid stuff later this week to raise some money for a great cause.
Well, we didn't talk about it, but I will donate. I love this stuff. I love watching you kind of sweat a little bit too. And I do secretly hope. Okay. So two things, by the way. One is like, at some point when I'm not changing diapers anymore, I want to try this with you. Like, whether I have to like donate a shitload of money to do it. Nope. Sorry, Jeremiah. If I have to donate a bunch of money to do it with you, that actually be kind of fun. Cause that actually, looking at a separate topic altogether, that's sort of the basis of how we started Geeks on a Plane back at 500, 10, 15 years ago, was that we did crazy stuff and some people were willing to just, you know, pay to come along, you know, so, and then more money goes to the cause. So that's cool. Secondly, I think you should at some point think about a separate donation level where you'd wear their t-shirt or something like that for a certain set of hours of the day.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, we are thinking about prop bets for the future as well. So I think I like the way you think. I love how you want to maximize revenue. And I would absolutely love to have you down there for a challenge, if only because at least for most of the time that you and I have been friends, you have been in much better shape physically than I am. And so I would think it'd be interesting to see if I can keep up with you.
It'd be fun. The idea of running around, well, okay, separately. I think next year I'm going to do at least one of the runs down at Disney. So this whole thing would be really fun to kind of, anyway, I'll do one of these next ones with you. I just got to figure out how to get these kids out of diapers first. And that way it comes a little bit easier.
It's easier to get them out of diapers if you stop having them. Just want to point that out.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. But my wife's a smoke show, and there you have it.
Yeah, there you go. Boy, what a way to plant the flag at the end of the episode. I love it. Well, I gotta pack my stuff and start heading to Orlando. So craziness to ensue shortly after this episode goes live.
All right, man. Well, I'll be living vicariously through you. Have a lot of fun down there.